Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Magnus Tiefold. I'll be with you for the next hour. It's Thanksgiving today, so happy Thanksgiving to everyone and a good time to perhaps acknowledge that we are on the ancestral and unceded territories of the local Coast Salish peoples, the Musqueam, the Tsleil-Waututh, and the Squamish, and many others throughout our broadcast region. We have a good show for you today. We're going to start off with a really interesting interview about voting reform. A little later on the show, we have, of course, our regular segment on gardening with Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability. And we have Peter R.H. at the end of the show talking about COVID, plus some other great segments and some music. So yeah, we've got a great show for you. We're going to start off with our talk on voting reform. I had the opportunity to talk to Ryan Campbell. He's an SFU grad student, and perhaps a bit of a political nerd, and I mean that in the best way. He's been active working with Fair Vote Canada on the issue of voting reform and the promotion of proportional representation as an alternative to our current system of first-past-the-post that's used throughout Canada for provincial and federal elections. We had a great talk and talked about the various aspects of it and what are the pros and cons of the different systems and why we might really want to move to one of the various proportional representation systems. Thanks for joining me today, Ryan Campbell of Fair Vote Canada. Maybe you can just introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about what Fair Vote does.
So, like you said, my name is Ryan. I'm actually a part-time student at the SFU, and I'm also engineer. I work full-time in construction as an engineer. I've been involved with Fair Vote Canada since around 2011, 2012. And Fair Vote Canada, we're a national campaign dedicated to adopting proportional representation for all levels of government across Canada.
Right. Pretty much all provinces, territories, and the federal government use the first-past-the-post system. Maybe you can just very briefly explain what that is for folks.
So first-past-the-post, it can refer to a few systems, but normally what we talk about in Canada is you have a single winner in a riding. So there's only one MP or MLA per riding, and you just mark an X next to whoever you like, and whoever gets the most votes wins. It has a few problems. One is that you can have a situation where a party or a group of candidates or whatever gets a majority of the seats without getting the majority of the vote. And you can get, there's been examples of 10, 12% of the vote. I think 13% in Quebec recently, where you get no seats at all. So it leaves large segments of the population underrepresented. Not even necessarily the usual suspects, not just small parties, but like urban conservatives, rural progressives, people like that.
What are the shortcomings of the first-past-the-post system?
Well, I may have jumped the gun a little there, but yeah, I think really it doesn't reflect how people voted. And one MP or MLA, it's hard for them to really reflect the diversity of their riding. We're an increasingly diverse country, not just, you know, in any one aspect, but especially politically. And the minority groups don't get represented. Now, a lot of MPs and MLAs will say, well, I represent everyone in my riding. But the reality is when it comes to their vote in the legislature, which is, you know, what makes us a democracy, you can't vote for and against a budget. You can't vote for and against a particular piece of legislation. So it just fails to represent about half of voters.
Right. So, I mean, first past the post, the current system used here in almost everywhere in Canada, is not actually used very much in other democratic countries. The UK uses it, the US uses it, but not many others. So it's been a constant sort of discussion around this topic from groups like Fair Vote about the importance or the need for change. What makes the status quo so sticky?
Well, I think we have a saying, especially this time of year, that turkeys don't want to vote for Thanksgiving. I think that's a problem that, you know, there's winners and losers among politicians with proportional representation, not necessarily among voters. You know, certain politicians, if you come from an area that's very heavily electing representatives from one party, suddenly under proportional representation, your party goes from having a, like, for example, Liberals in Toronto having literally all the seats with half the vote, suddenly, you know, you might be getting 55% of the seats, 60% of the seats. That presents a risk to you. So there's that issue. And the reality is that people have an interest in the system that elected them, unfortunately. So parties will look at proportional representation as great when they're in opposition, and then they kind of lose enthusiasm the longer they're in government, unfortunately. That's one problem. I think the other is that we're not taught about this in schools. Like, the civics education doesn't cover the voting system. In fact, the way I was taught, and this was a while ago, actually teaches wrong information about the voting system. You know, you have your model parliament in class and everyone gets to be an MP. Well, that kind of is the logic of proportional representation, where, you know, not everyone gets to be an MP, but everyone, or most people, you know, in New Zealand, say 95% of people get someone they voted for as an MP. And that's not true under first past the post. It's like 50%. Right. So we're actually we're not teaching this to people. So I think there's an awareness issue. I think people kind of feel the effects of it, though, that they don't feel very satisfied with the results necessarily. There isn't a connection made between the voting system and the problems that people see, just because of that education. And fair enough, right? Like, people have only so much time. They're not going to go out of their way to read chapters and chapters about the minutiae of voting systems.
So you mentioned, we've sort of touched on proportional representation, but what are the alternatives that Fair Vote advocates for?
So we advocate specifically for proportional representation, and that could take a number of approaches. There's mixed member proportional, there's single transferable vote, there's list systems. There's a lot of technical terms I could go into for each one. I think the simplest one to explain would be a list system. So you might have 4 members in a riding instead of 1. Maybe it's less in a rural area. Maybe it's more in an urban area. And you get a quarter of the vote, you get 1 seat, whether you're a party or an independent. If you get half the vote, you get 2 seats, 3/4 of the vote, 3 seats, and so on. And that's pretty simple to understand, I think. You also can have what's called an open list, where you actually vote for a candidate rather than a party. So the people that fill those seats are also directly accountable to voters. But there's a lot of ways you can do this. You can, it really, what we're focused on is the principle that people should get what they voted for.
So what are, you've mentioned some of the benefits and advantages. Are there disadvantages?
I don't feel there are, at least if you use reasonable forms of proportional representation that keep the number of MPs elected at one time at a reasonable level, and that keep a direct connection between voters and representatives. You have that direct link that if you don't like someone, you can just not vote for them. I think there's very few drawbacks for people. There's a lot of evidence that there's better healthcare policy, better environmental policy, stronger economic growth, better trade policy. All these things are connected to proportional representation because the incentives are different for the politicians. But it's the politicians, those are the, and a few connected, you know, lobbyists that want to lobby just one party rather than maybe multiple parties in a coalition. They're the ones that have the most to lose. Unfortunately, they're in a position of influence to decide to keep the status quo as well.
Right. In some countries working with a proportional representation system, there can be a sort of tendency for fringe parties to sometimes gain outsized influence in the system just because they're needed to form a coalition. Are there ways to protect against that?
Yeah, one is you have what's called a threshold, and so you might need a certain number of votes, like say 5% of the vote or 3% of the vote to gain seats. Others, just you keep the riding sizes or region sizes smaller. So like my example of a 4-seat riding, you need about a quarter, actually in practice, more like a sixth of the vote to be likely to take a seat. That's still a big chunk of the votes. And that, so that limits the number of parties you get. But I think the other thing that you can always do in any of these systems is the big parties can work together if there's a small party making outrageous demands or demands that aren't reflective of the majority. And we had an example of that at BC. The BC NDP wanted to proceed with liquefied natural gas development. And whether you think that's good or bad, the Greens didn't want to support that. And what they did is they made an agreement with the BC Liberals to get the legislation passed. So, you know, this concern about outsized influence of a small party, and frankly, the Greens weren't that small. They got, I think, 18% of the vote. That's pretty significant. But that's how the system, you know, whether you agree with that policy or not, from a democratic standpoint, that's how it should work, is that the major parties should be able to cooperate when they have common ground. And that's, you know, you see that in countries like Germany right now, for example. I think Denmark is doing that right now, too.
So Fair Vote recently has done a study of attitudes in BC on voting reform and possible alternatives. What did you hear from that?
Well, it was actually, if this is the there was a committee of the legislature that asked people to submit their views on the voting system, whether they're for proportional representation or against. About a little under 1,000 responded. In some way, but about 850 addressed actually the voting system specifically. Right. And of those 850, about 800, 93% said they want proportional representation. Another 5% said they want the existing single member ridings with a ranked ballot, which we don't think really solves fundamental problems here. We've used that in the past and scrapped it. And then another 2% wanted to keep first past the post. So pretty overwhelming support there. And it's a fairly significant number of responses. So there is an appetite in certain quarters for reform.
So what kind of things were, because it was individuals and also organizations participating in this process, yeah?
Yeah, so of those 850, I think 46 were organizations, and I think 43 supported proportional representation specifically. And that's, you know, it could be not-for-profits like ourselves. Yeah. It could be charities. It could be unions, for example. Quite a few responded to this.
What were people and groups saying in terms of why they were supporting proportional representation?
Well, I think everyone has their own reasons, potentially. Like, you might see it for a pragmatic reason, like I want better environmental policy or I want better labor policy. But I think the one that most people find the most compelling is just fairness, right? That it shouldn't matter where you live to how effective your vote is, right? If you are in northern BC and you support the NDP, it's very unlikely you will get your vote count towards electing someone. And just like if you're in Vancouver and you support the Conservatives, you're very unlikely to have your vote count towards electing a Conservative, right? Only one out of 12, even though Conservatives got a third of the vote in Vancouver. So that kind of fairness, I think, is the most compelling kind of emotionally engaging argument. But there's pragmatic reasons as well.
So BC has voted three times, I think, on around this issue in recent decades, with various different results, but never quite enough to actually meet to get the change. Although I think the very first one did in fact come up as a majority, just not the 60% threshold. Why do you think that is? Why do you think there seems to be a lot of support. There seems to be a lot of arguments before it, but what's happening when this issue comes up towards a vote?
I think one issue is referendums aren't a good way to decide minority rights. And this is about minority rights. You know, all these groups, urban conservatives, rural progressives, Greens, these are minority groups. Yeah. And you don't really have the opportunity to kind of bargain and advance these minority groups' interests in a way that's fair in a referendum. I think that education issue I talked about earlier plays into it. We've got polls both nationally and in a couple of places, not specifically BC, but the national one I think is reflective that about 40% of people think that the current system is proportional. So it's hard to, you know, make an argument for proportional representation when people think it's the status quo, that's how this works. And again, you know, it's not anyone's, you know, fault for this, except that we're not teaching this, right? And people are not, you know, naturally drawn to go to like Wikipedia and read like 10 pages on voting systems. I think those are big issues for referendums. It's actually really a recent thing, this idea of a referendum on electoral reform. All other cases, like, because we've had a lot of electoral reform in Canada. We brought in the secret ballot in the 1870s. That was pretty important. Things like independent redistricting, the charter, which Section 3 of the Charter, universal suffrage, none of these things were done by referendum, with one exception, which is BC had a referendum on whether or not women should be allowed to vote. And that thankfully passed. But all other provinces just had a vote of the legislature. And a country that also had votes on referendums on whether or not women could vote is Switzerland. And that failed up to the 1950s and didn't pass until the 1970s. So you can see, you know, there's this gap of like 50 years between our trajectory and Switzerland on democratic progress. And I think most people would agree that was progress because they insisted on referendums here. I think there's also issues with the lack of accountability, too, that if, you know, politicians can say they support electoral reform, but not actually do anything to support a referendum, whereas a vote of the legislature, yes or no, is much more direct. If you want this policy, you know if your representative voted yes or no in a vote of the legislature. You don't necessarily know what they did in a referendum.
Where do you want to see this process or this issue going from here? What would you like to see happen now?
Well, what I'd like to see is proportional representation adopted. They created this process, so they should, you know, if they're going to have this process, they should respect kind of the feedback they got. They chose it. But other things they could do, there's, you know, another new citizens assembly, I think would be productive. The BC Liberals have actually promised that in the previous referendum and then reneged on the promise immediately once the results were known. And the other is the conservative vice chair of the committee talked about having municipal electoral reform, you know, try some of these systems out potentially at a municipal level first and give at least municipalities the option to take these systems. I think that would be very productive too.
You're an SFU student, and you've been involved with Fair Vote, I think you said, for more than 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this so important to you?
You know, I that's a hard question. I think I was radicalized as a student in my first undergraduate degree that I thought in our student elections that I had a student union at one level that used proportional representation. Yeah. And then I had at another level that used first past the post, and you got much more adversarial politics in first past the post than you did in the proportional system and less reflective of the students. So, you know, student elections have pretty low turnout. I don't know how reflective you're going to get in general. And it just, the more I dug into it, the more it made sense to me. Like, I think the arguments for proportional representation are really the same as the arguments for democracy itself, that, voters aren't going to be right 100% of the time, but they're more likely to be right than having, you know, like some kind of distortion of that. And you see in like BC, you know, the 1996 election where the BC Liberals got more votes than the NDP, but the NDP formed a majority government thanks to just the vagaries of where the election boundaries are. I was pretty young for that one, but I remember it distinctly, and that bothered me. And then the next election, NDP got almost wiped out and the Liberals got almost every seat. It really was formative that this is not working really for anyone.
Right.
I'd add to that too. Like, I think one thing is I feel just as a voter and an activist, I make too many compromises when I go to the ballot box, and I would like to be better able to express what I want in a more honest and nuanced way.
Right. Thanks so much for speaking to me today. Ryan Campbell is a representative for Fair Vote Canada and an SFU student. Thanks so much for talking to me today, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
That was Ryan Campbell from Fair Vote Canada talking about recent initiatives from the provincial government to look into and perhaps move forward on some ideas around proportional representation. Ryan Campbell's an SFU student. He's been active as a volunteer and a campaigner for Fair Vote Canada for over 10 years. And I really want to thank him for taking the time to talk to us today and dig into this issue. Really fascinating stuff. All right, here's some music. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, and this is Speak Up.
Try and be invisible. Watch the sun drift across the classroom wall. Chapter 21, the Easter rising. Ah, but I was never really there at all. I was standing in the hallway when he asked me, what is it you really wanna be? So I took out my guitar and played the boxer, a song of leaving my home and family. One of them poor boys, bound by every street they leave behind. When I catch myself reflected in a window, I see a young man, time out of mind. If I could walk him to the corner, I'd ask him, what is it you really want? Say that it gets easier, or that I became the man you wanna be. Oh, truth and beauty, fallen stars and memories. Oh, youth and duty, hold your
bird note. Some bird songs leave us in admiration of their beauty, some with a sense of wonder at their complexity, and others are downright comical. This male willow ptarmigan sounds like he might be laughing, or at least doing his best to make others laugh. As a maker of silly sounds, he beats the Three Stooges hands down. For the male ptarmigan, though, these sounds are no laughing matter. Where it nests in the low, dense, shrubby willow tundra of Alaska and Canada, the willow ptarmigan crows to attract females and show other males he's in charge of his stretch of tundra. This stocky northern relative of grouse and chickens is a bright rusty brown above with a white belly and wings. The hen ptarmigan is so well camouflaged in brown tones, you might be looking right at her and never know it. But the male is another story. Picture those white wings propelling that chunky, rusty body in a long arc over the tundra as he chuckles his way across the tops of the willows. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. This episode is brought to you by the Tuttleman Foundation, with thanks for their generous support.
Want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, I have the perfect show for you. Come hang out with me at Raccoon City every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Hope to see you there.
Lily dreams of exploring outer space. Ahmed dreams of becoming someone's favorite teacher. Ethan dreams of going home, of seeing his friends, of staying alive. Right now in Canada, more than 10,000 children are being treated for cancer, and one in five will not survive. When you support Childhood Cancer Canada, you help fund critical research and provide financial assistance to families in their fight. Give life to dreams beyond kids' cancer at livefordreams.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Time now for Gardening with Embark. Joining me in the studio, as he does every week, is Pablo Vimas, Gardens Manager for Embark Sustainability and our weekly gardens expert. So we've been talking, well, we're heading into the fall, as everyone knows, because you can feel it outside. And we've been talking a bit about preparing the garden and the, you know, for sort of the end of the season. But the end of the season isn't the end of the gardener's work, is it?
Correct. Good morning, everyone. So we are in week 41. And we, with this weather, which has changed to a cold, damp weather, shorter days, so there is little time to be in the outdoors. So, so our time to be outdoors has been restricted, and we need to still continue doing our janitorial work. Yeah. Remember, being a good gardener also means being a good janitor of the garden. So at the moment, we are tidying up the garden, pruning shrubs, pruning whatever we don't need, the bulbs, uprooting bulbs, to store over the winter, and thinking, okay, where... thinking on winter maintenance. So as we move to a new garden, my mind at the moment is it's going to rain, the water is going to puddle, and those puddles will turn into ice. And I need to know, be aware where those puddles are, because during the winter I will come and visit the garden, and I will see there's an slippery area, and we don't want to fall in that area, or we need to find a way how to encourage the drainage of their water. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, we've been talking at least for the last 3 weeks about hoop houses. Okay. So what is the concept of hoop houses? Sometimes we have